Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Jonathan Mayer. How are you, Jonathan?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, good. We were talking last week about producing a wine and the equipment you've been looking at in the process of making sparkling wines. I think we're going to continue on with that. Okay, so once the wine's been settled, hopefully alcoholic fermentation hasn't started, you need to then get it into your fermentation tanks, which you said you're going for a 1-to-2 ratio. How do you move it around? Are you using pumps there?
Yes, we'll be using pumps that are peristaltic pumps.
What does that mean?
It's a really, really gentle pump compared to, for example, a centrifugal pump or impeller or air pump.
So an impeller pump, I think of impellers as lots of little fans that are just...
Yes, it's like flaps.
Flaps, yeah, and it just sort of picks up the wine and flings it forward.
Yes.
But the flaps are moving against the surface, which can capture things and tear things. And
yes, and they have quite a bad reputation of being harsh on the juice because, yes, it is quite violent.
Mm-hmm.
The peristaltic creates a gentle movement. There's no impeller, or it's just... I have a bit of a hard time explaining that.
You've got a roller, a hose, and the roller pushes against the hose, and as it rotates round, it pushes the wine through the hose. It's
yes.
A bit like getting a hose and with your hands just going squish, squish,
yes,
squish,
exactly.
Squish, squish. And as you're going squish, squish, squish up the hose, you're actually moving the wine
exactly.
Along. Yeah, no, I can see that. I've actually seen those in Baden in Germany. A few years ago, I saw those sort of pumps. So they thought they were quite good pumps at that mm-hmm. stage as well. So what's it called again? The
peristaltic.
Peristaltic. And then you use that to shift the wine from what the holding tanks to the fermentation tanks. The wine's settled out at this stage. Why do you need to be... Hopefully there's no real floaty skin matter or seeds or anything like that. Why do you need to be too gentle at that stage?
Once the juice is cleared of the largest sediments, then it's less of a concern because the size becomes so small that it's not as important of a factor to have
mm-hmm.
gentle pumping.
Yeah, yeah.
We still want to be gentle, you know, through all stages, just to secure and
always treat, be gentle.
Exactly.
Okay, so you get them into your tank. Have you looked at yeast strains or anything like that? Are you going for wild fermentation or anything crazy like that? Or is it very much inoculated yeasts?
I believe we'll inoculate, yes.
Yeah.
We will probably do a few trials to see what we think works best and what, you know, reflects how it's grown here on the estate. But wild fermentation, no.
Not into that?
Not now, no.
Get some of those local inoculated yeast to get a local population, then you can use local populations,
maybe,
perhaps.
Maybe, yeah. No, that's not a risk that I don't think anyone wants to take now at this stage. Maybe later we'll try with a few lots.
And have you chosen yeast strains, or what's the process of choosing the yeast strains?
For the moment, I think we're focusing on the classic Champagne strains.
And what are they?
The standard from the Institut Oenologique de Champagne, or I think that's what most people use in Champagne. And then we will do a few trials with different yeast to see what we can get.
Yeah, yeah. Because yeasts can make a massive effect on the outcome of the wine. You know, you can see some yeast strains adding flavors to wines effectively. You know, the precursor chemicals might be there, but
yeah.
If you choose a different yeast, you'll get a different flavor profile in the wine.
Yes, work with yeast that we know produce our low sulfur compound producers, and yeast that also do not produce too much foam, and yeast that are happy to work in not so warm environments.
I suppose you've mentioned the word sulfur a couple of times. Because aging sparkling wines is such a reductive process, there's no real oxygen getting into the wine, and when the wines are finally finished their fermentation and bottled, they are, you know, yeast is an oxygen scavenger as it breaks down inside the bottle. So are you worried about sort of reduction or sulfury characteristics in the wine? Is it something you're like, oh my gosh, we need to just keep an eye on this. This is something we need to really worry about.
Yes, that's a big concern. But through, you know, attentive winemaking practices and regular checks, I don't think that should be an issue.
Yeah. We looked at sulfur and the process of of sulfur right through from the vineyard through, particularly for New Zealand, because there was quite a lot of concern with New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs and screw caps and reduction and all this sort of stuff. Trying to minimize it through careful irrigation, because if you didn't irrigate correctly, then you landed up having to feed it, as one viticulturist described it to me, having to feed the wine yeast sort of hamburgers and chips to get everything working properly. But mm-hmm. then that creates a lot of sulfury characteristics.
Yes,
and,
yeah. It's,
yeah, if you're feeding the yeast strain, so you're going to make sure your juice comes in pretty good quality with the right nutrient levels.
Yes.
What is it? YAN, isn't it?
It's yeast assimilable nitrogen. So, nitrogen levels are quite important.
Is that an issue with here? Because you're on limestone. Limestone, I imagine, doesn't have a lot of nitrogen embedded in it.
You would think not, but it's been a working farm. It still is, actually. Prior to planting the vines, the blocks were planted with mustard and or rapeseed. So there's been...
They're nitrogen fixing, are they?
There should be decent levels of nitrogen.
We've got the wines. We've had them in the tank. We've chosen the yeast. The fermentation's kicked off. How long does fermentation typically take?
Several weeks here, I would think, 3, 4, 5, hopefully on the shorter side.
But, so you can have a holiday afterwards? Or?
Yeah. No, usually I would even think 3 should be plenty enough. But.
Yep. Okay, and then the wine's finished. Bottling is probably the next step, is it? Or is it filtering? What's the step after that?
After the first alcoholic fermentation, it could be going through malolactic. It's not a fermentation, but everyone calls it malolactic fermentation, so I'll do the same. It's a conversion by bacteria of malic acid into lactic acid,
yep.
Which it's a natural way of deacidifying the wine a little bit. It's a way of getting additional stability to the wine. You might have seen some wines that were finished in the bottle, and you would open the bottle, and it was fizzy, and it smelled a bit of yogurt or...
Yeah.
That's an example of malolactic that starts in the bottle.
Okay.
If it hasn't been done before and if it hasn't been treated properly, so...
Yeah, because malolactic bacteria is quite sensitive to sulfur, isn't it? So.
Yes, but they are also quite resilient, so they might be inactive at some stage, but they are not dead and they will be active again at some stage.
The malo acid is quite a crisp acid, as you're saying. It's like green apples almost, versus...
It has two acidic functions, and, well, that's part of why it does feel really acidic. When the lactic acid is it's a smoother...
Smoother and softer, okay. And as you say, sometimes it can create sort of a creamy, yogurty type aromas mm-hmm. as well. Do you plan on always doing malolactic or partial, or, you know, is it the question still up?
It is definitely still up, yes. It will be same thing. It's, you know, as we go and as we discover what the vineyard gives us. We're in England and I've heard about levels of malic acid that I've never heard of before.
They're very high.
Yes, really, really high.
Really high malic acid. In the UK, in specific, compared to Champagne, or?
Yes.
Okay, so what's driving that? Why is the malic acid so high in England then compared to other regions?
Well, the acid level should go down with maturation in the vineyard.
As the grapes ripen, yeah.
Yes, sugars will go up and malic levels will go down, but...
England's cooler than Champagne, isn't it?
So. Between the cooler temperatures, maybe a bit of lack of sun sometimes, mm-hmm. all that combined.
In Champagne, do they typically do malolactic fermentation, or is it very much depends on the winery?
Yes, it depends on the winery. It's a stylistic choice, and also it can be depending on the year, on the season.
Okay, and so here it's likely we're going to be doing it a lot.
Probably.
Okay, do you have your bottling line in place? Because there's two bottling lines, really, you need for sparkling wine production. The first one, to get the wine into the bottle, a bit of yeast and a bit of sugar. But then you almost need a bottling line to get the dead yeast out again.
Yes. No, we have nothing yet. Mark and I went to Italy last year to look at some bottling lines. We're still talking to people around. Mark and I are going to go to Champagne actually quite soon now to do the same, to look at lines again. And it's a significant investment, so we want to make sure that we pick what is best for us. And
in France, sometimes you have these mobile bottling lines. People come up, and a lot of the equipment you need in winery, it all needs to be used by everybody at the same time. But bottling, you've got some flexibility. You know, you can keep the wine and tank for another month and it probably won't hurt it too much.
That's correct. And we'll do that. We've talked already to some Institut Oenologique de Champagne who would probably come and take care of our first bottling or first 2 or 3 years of bottling. When you get to 1 million bottles, that just doesn't add up anymore. You need your own.
So are you looking to bring in a mobile bottling line just in the short term?
That most likely, yes, that's what we'll do.
And what sort of factors are you looking for with a bottling line? I know it sounds crazy, but is it because you're going to be producing a lot of wine? Is it going to be, you need to get something with throughput, or is there quality issues? You know, filling a bottle up doesn't look too technical.
No, it doesn't in theory, but you want something that where you can really control the oxygen intake, something that is easy to maintain and to keep clean.
Mm-hmm.
Hygiene in the winery is really, really important. So you want a bottling line that is, again, that is easy to clean, easy to open, take parts out, and something that runs quite fast,
yeah,
efficiently, and that is easy to repair by yourself if you have to, because when you're in the middle of bottling and you have wine in a tank with some sugar and some yeast, it starts to ferment really fast. And if your machine stops and needs to be repaired, you cannot wait for a technician to come within, in 12 or 24 hours.
Do you do the dosage in the tank or into the bottle during bottling? A dosage being that sugary yeast that you add to the
It will all be added in the tank.
Oh, it's always added in the tank, is it?
And with a mixer to keep a constant movement in the tank, so it's homogenized.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. For some reason in my mind, I always thought it was like you got your bottle, you filled it up with wine, and then you added the sugar and the yeast at that point,
and
then sealed it. But yes, you do it in the tank. So no wonder you don't want it to go wrong in the tank, do you?
No.
Otherwise, you're going to land it with Prosecco. Okay, fair enough. And then you showed me where you're going to store the wines for the first period. That doesn't look like a big area, you know, if you're going to get near 1 million bottles.
No, it's going to be full quite fast. But this is phase one of the whole project. We are currently looking at not extending, but building additional, like a storage facility.
Yeah.
Could it be transforming one of the buildings we already have, or maybe digging in the hills back there?
Yeah, I was going to say, because chalk's pretty easy to dig into, or relatively easy to dig into, and then it would have that lovely traditional feel. You can have all that black mold on the roofs that everybody gets excited about in Champagne.
Well, yes, I don't think we would have any exposed chalk. We need a lot of space, because if you think about it, because we would like to age the wines on lees for about 3 years, means that we need to be able to keep three different vintages at once.
Yeah.
So 3 million bottles, it's a gigantic volume to store.
Yeah. And you've got problems with storage buildings, so maybe underground is the way to go, but that's quite expensive.
Yes, well, we won't discuss finances just now.
Okay.
Because Mark just arrived. So let's keep that for another day. But no, that's something we are currently talking about, and certainly looking at, what's going to be the most efficient way of doing that. But we, for this phase of the buildings, we start from scratch. So we have the opportunity of doing it right.
Okay, and just to finish up with then, so once the wine's aged, you've then got to do the riddling effectively, get rid of that dead yeast that the wine's been lying on, giving it all that sort of lovely autolysis, yeasty flavors. Is the bottling line going to be able to do the riddling as well, or are you going to use gyro pallets, or has someone got a really strong set of wrists that are just going to do the traditional riddling of turning?
Yes, well, thanks for volunteering.
Not me, mate.
At this stage, I think we'll be working with cages that go from, as soon as you bottle the wine, you can transfer the bottles into these cages.
Yeah.
Get these cages into storage room, and then after 3 years, pick the cages, load them on a gyro pallet, and then the riddling is done.
Oh, that's quite nice then, because I presume the cages can be moved by forklift.
Yes, so exactly.
You're reducing the labor component of it, really, aren't you?
A little bit, yes.
A little bit, well, compared to maybe the traditional methods.
But a cage, as an average, takes 500 bottles.
Yeah.
So it's still a lot of movements of cages.
Yeah.
So we'll have some gyro pallet. Riddling takes about a week.
Yep.
And then we'll hopefully have our own disgorging line.
Okay, that's separate to the bottling line then.
It's a completely different.
Yeah, I've seen disgorging lines in on YouTube actually, and they look pretty impressive, you know.
Yes, they're quite nice pieces of equipment, you know, from the glycol bath to the disgorging itself. And
Because you got to get the yeast at the neck, which is the gyro pallet, freeze it, open the bottle up, let the pressure shoot out that slug of frozen yeast, and then put a cork in it, really, isn't it? And top it up and put a cork in it.
Yes. And then there's a couple months, because at this stage, you're going to add some, you know, liqueur d'expédition, that mix of wine, sugar, to really finalize the blend to your liking. So then the wine needs to homogenize for about 3 months. So the wine needs to be stored again.
Mm-hmm.
And after 3 months, we then need to label it and package it. So there's also another line for labeling.
Excellent. All right, then. I think we're going to wrap it up there, Jonathan.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Cheers.